Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Morning. You're right. How are you this morning? All good, I hope. Me, yeah, not too bad. Happy Makerfield Day. It's the big day. It's election, it's the polling day. Happy Waterloo Day, actually. More importantly, more significantly, it's the anniversary of Waterloo Day. I'm sure we'll talk about that on at the end of the show. Okay, it's just gone 1 minute past eight in the AM, British summertime, on Thursday, the 18th of June, in the year of our Lord, 2026. You're the glorious band, the chosen few, my band of brothers and sisters. Thank you for joining me. Without you, isn't a thing. As always, I'm joined by my producer, Little Harry. How are you this morning, good sir?
Morning. Yeah, I'm all good.
Okay. Tiny bit of housekeeping before we dive straight into it. Because it's an election day, a polling day, the papers, for some reason... Well, there's a legitimate reason, but the mainstream media that's regulated by Ofcom won't show the front pages of the papers. This is like an Ofcom rule in this country. So usually where I've got like the BBC that show us a digital image of all the front pages, you don't have that. So I've got physically got all the papers there, not the Guardian, not giving the Guardian any money, but all the other ones, got them there. So I'll sort of just hold them up for you. And we'll talk about them that way. We've done that before, didn't we? Worked out fine. Sometimes they do that on an actual TV, don't they? Physically have the paper there. So we'll do that. Another small point. I don't usually look at my chat. Well, I can't really look at my chat in real time very much, other than the odd glance during a show. I don't know how other people do that, like Asmongold or lots and lots of creators do that. They somehow monologue without really any dead time and are reading their chat, even a really quick chat. Somehow they read it and I'm not capable of that. I can't play guitar and sing. I can't play piano and sing at the same time. I'm just not capable of it. So, okay. But I did have a little bit of a look at my chat yesterday after the show. And there was a few people in there saying, like, I can't believe Bo still reads the mainstream media. He believes all the mainstream media. I make a joke, don't I, sometimes? This isn't the joke. This isn't the show for you. Get out. I didn't mean it. I still love you, baby. We can make this work. I do that joke a fair bit, don't I? But if you really think that, this isn't the show for you. This show is about what is in the news cycle in the mainstream media every day. That's what this show is. If you don't like that, then legitimately, this isn't the show for you. What can I say? Why are you talking about this? Why are you talking about what's in the mainstream media? Because that's what this show is. That's what the concept of the show is. So... I don't know what else to tell people. All right. A few people annoyed I wasn't immediately talking about Rupert Lowe's rape gang inquiry. Again, I'm going to talk about what I want to talk about in the order I'm going to talk about it in. I'm going to be dictated to or bullied by my own chat, as if. Although, having said that, a little note about the rape gang inquiry, because it isn't, again, the corporate mainstream media ignoring it, basically. Certainly the papers are memory-holing it as soon as possible. I read a chunk of it yesterday and last night. When I bring it to you guys, when I talk about it, I want to be able to talk about it in its entirety. And I haven't finished reading it. As I say, it's 219 pages long. So I'm going to finish it over the weekend. And I'll talk to you all about it in detail on Monday, regardless of whether the legacy corporate mainstream media will talk about it, which they almost certainly won't be. I didn't want to talk about it really in any depth until I finished it. Okay, we'll do that. I will do that. Somebody in the chat yesterday said Bo's being paid to not talk about it. You insult me, sir. You disgrace yourself with such a baseless claim. Why would I be paid not to talk about it? What nonsense. All right, okay. With all that said, shall we get into it? What's in the papers today? What's the legacy corporate mainstream media banging on about? All right, we'll start with the iPaper. It's up to me. I'd always start with the iPaper. It's usually the best stuff. I don't know. Are we going to hold it up to the stain cam, Harry, or are we going to hold it up to the other one? What do you reckon? That one's probably a bit closer, isn't it? People can see that. D-Day for Prime Minister as Makerfield voters shape future of UK. Well, there you go. And as you can see at the very top, England won. Just very, very quickly then, because I know you guys don't really care about it. England did play their opening match against Croatia and won 4-2. There you go. That's all I'll say about it. Although it is on the front of nearly all the papers one way or another. Harry Kane scored 2, didn't he? So. Okay. All right. The blurb says, Starmer said to be sulphurous. He said to be sulphurous towards challengers Burnham and Streeting as Labour leadership battle turns personal ahead of crucial by-election. So yesterday, Keir Starmer sat down with Sky News, Beth Rigby. She's weird, isn't she, Beth Rigby? I think she's weird. Sat down with her and he said, I hope Andy Burnham wins the by-election. I've got a very good relationship with Andy Burnham. I hope he wins. And if he does, I will make sure he enjoys an important place at the centre of government, at the top of government. That's pure cope, isn't it, really? Pure cope. As if Keir Starmer hopes Andy Burnham wins. Because if Andy Burnham wins, it's probably the end of Keir Starmer's political career, isn't it? Because they're definitely going to launch a leadership election. And if and when it comes down to the final two, if and when everything shakes out, it's Burnham versus Starmer. Burnham wins that. Burnham's much more popular among the parliamentary party, the general membership of the Labour Party and the unions. So if and when it boils down to the last two, Burnham wins. So Starmer saying, oh, I wish him all the best. He's a great guy. But insider saying he's actually sulphurous towards them. That's the quote, sulphurous. Okay. Starmer has pledged to offer Burnham a, quote, big job in his cabinet if he, Andy Burnham, wins the by-election. But allies believe Manchester Mayor would not serve under him. Again, that was another thing Starmer said yesterday. It's sort of almost like a bit of a bribe or a little bit of a political gambit of, if Burnham wins, he could, instead of ousting me for the leadership of the party and the country, I'll just give him a plum job, you know, as a Secretary of State or something. The insider saying that's sort of fake, that's phony. And King Bumham himself, no Sterling Burnham, King of the North, and his guy liner, said he wouldn't accept that anyway. He's not interested in that anyway. It's all or nothing for him, for Bumham. Okay. Returning from G7 summit, Prime Minister insists he is not bitter or angry about his predicament, but vows, I'm not going to walk away, I am going to fight. It's one of those things, isn't it? Not always, but very often, if you have to say you're not bitter or angry, you probably are. If you have to tell other people you're cool, you're probably not cool, right? Usually. Not always, but often. In this case, I think that's true. I'm not bitter that I'm going to get politically assassinated. I'm not bitter about it. Okay. Just be honest. Again, why do you have to do that robot politician thing? Me and Andy have a good relationship. He is great. Why? Just be honest. Just be like, no. I'll fight tooth and nail because I'm the right guy and he isn't. Screw him, effectively. No, we're all good friends. Nonsense. Farage's reform faces a battle to beat Burnham with Restore vying for votes. Restore merely vying for votes. We'll see how well they do. Of course, we're hoping they will do better than the polling saying, a bit better than 7 or 8%. We'll see. All right. Of course, I'm going up there. Again, I told you guys yesterday, tomorrow morning, it will be Dan Tubb doing the Bow Show. Because I'm going to be up in Makerfield from later today all through tonight and into the wee hours of Friday for the result. And one of the low seaters cameramen's going with me and we'll get vox pops and interview a few people, etc. Try and get a little bit of content for low seaters website and things and YouTube. So anyway, Dan Tubb will be doing the Bow Show tomorrow, not me. All right, there we go. What about the Times, the venerable Times? To just think, there you go. It's Harry Kane, football player there. Change is coming, says Burnham in snub to PM. So that was the story again. That Keir Starmer effectively sort of tried to offer him a political bribe of a type. I'll give you a really good job. And Andy Burnham, more or less straight away, or the Andy Burnham camp, comes out and says, no, we're not interested in that. No, thanks. Instead, he's saying, change is coming. Like, I'm gunning for you, bro. I'm coming for your job, yeah? I'm not interested in being your Home Secretary or something, or even that. Okay. Yacht couple accuse MOD, Ministry of Defence, of taking Russia's side. I read this article, and to be fair, I don't care what two random people that own a yacht think, to be perfectly honest. Okay. Caitlin Moran's celebrity watch, could not care less. How is Caitlin Moran still a thing? How is she still published? Why does anyone care what she has to say about anything ever? Caitlin Moran. Oh, gross. Do better, The Times. Be better than publishing what Caitlin Moran's got to say about anything. Okay. Iran peace deal lifts sanctions and creates $300 billion building fund. Talk a bit about that. It's one of the main things in the news today. The what do they call it? The memorandum of understanding. Okay, should we have a look at it in some detail? Because it is one of the main news stories today in the papers, or in the whole corporate legacy mainstream media world. Look, so Trump actually signed it yesterday at Versailles. Harry, can you move the camera up a little, Sam? Anyway. US and Iran signed deal to end war, with both sides committing to further talks over next 60 days. So again, it's not a final peace deal. It's just a memorandum of understanding, giving themselves an extra 60 days, possibly more. But should we have a look in the detail of what it really is, what we're talking about? Here we go. We got it here. All right, point one, an end to conflict on all fronts. There's 14 points, by the way. Is it 14? Yeah, 14 points. Like Woodrow Wilson's 14 points. An end to conflict on all fronts, basically just saying that both sides will stop, or all sides will stop fighting each other, and that includes Israel and Hezbollah in Lebanon. So right away, the very first point is sticky, isn't it? Because, I mean, people accuse Israel of constantly, like, not stopping the war. But it is Hezbollah quite often, actually. It's Israel responding, perhaps disproportionately, but responding to Hezbollah. Then if you look at it from Hezbollah's point of view, not that I am sympathetic to Hezbollah, but if you look at it from their point of view, their country, southern Lebanon at least, is occupied by a foreign force. It's difficult, right? If Trump needs Hezbollah and Israel to stop firing things at each other, it's a big, just that, just the first point, it's a big ask. Isn't it? A really big ask. Can anyone trust Hezbollah not to just fire something off whenever they want to, and then Israel to sort of go berserk in response to that? Can you rely on that? No, historically you can't. It's like that's the linchpin of it all. Got to make sure Hezbollah never do anything aggressive ever again. Or Israel never do anything aggressive ever again in southern Lebanon. It's all pinned around that. Both Hezbollah and Israel sort of do what they want, don't they? Okay, but that's point one. Point two, respect for internal affairs. That's where the US and Iran pledge that they won't interfere with each other's sovereignty. Look, respect each other's sovereignty and territorial integrity. Both sides might claim that and sign a bit of paper saying that, but I doubt they'll do it. Both sides got their intelligence services in various ways. Again, I don't see that actually happening. Both sides might claim they're doing it, but whether they really are, like, will the US intelligence services never, ever, ever interfere in Iranian affairs ever again? It's pretty doubtful. Will Iran and their various tentacles, their intelligence services, never, ever, ever do anything in the United States ever again? Not likely, is it? Okay. But at least at least that one, both sides can pretend that they're abiding by it. And then both sides, no, they're not, but still, again, keep up the pretext that they are both abiding by it. Right. Spy games. Okay, that's not completely insanely intractable. First one, real sticking point. Second one, shaky, all right. Third one, an extendable 60-day timeline. So they say they'll give themselves a maximum of 60 days, although that timeline can be extended with mutual consent. So it's not a maximum of 60 days. Okay. All right. Point four is that the US will end its blockade of the Straits of Hormuz, and as soon as Iran starts doing what they're told, some of the US wording is that Iran needs to behave. If Iran behaves sufficiently enough, as far as the US are concerned, the US will end their blockade. And then point five is Iran ending its blockade, letting normal tankers and shipping through the Straits of Hormuz without trying to extort them for money, any sort of toll, with no charge. So point four and five is that both sides will sort of stop their blockade of the Straits of Hormuz. All right. Number six, money for Iranian reconstruction. So yeah, talking about $300 billion. Now, the Americans are insistent. Trump's making a big, and Rubio making a big song and dance about how none of that money will come from the United States, because the amount of time that Trump poured cold water and scorn on the fact that the Obama administration's back in, like, what, 2015 odd, gave the Iranians loads and loads of money, billions of dollars of money. And Trump said that was always bad and stupid and short-sighted and just wrong on many levels. But now, in this deal, Iran are going to get $300 billion. Well, the Americans are saying, let's be perfectly clear, none of that money, not a cent of that money, that's a quote as well, not a cent of money to Iran will come from the United States. So who is paying for it? Largely other Emirates, the neighbours of Iran. Again, it's a contingent on Iran doing the right thing. Right, what did they say? It's like performance-based. Once Iran shows it's complying and being a good boy, then some of the other, its neighbours, its rich neighbours, like UAE, or Bahrain, or whatever, they'll, like, invest in Iran to rebuild it to the tune of $300 billion. Okay. Sanctions to end. This is the one that Iran were most interested in. Well, let me just read it. The US will terminate all economic sanctions against Iran, including those included in UN Security Council resolutions and those implemented unilaterally by the US. The timeline, however, is unclear. Maybe that will get hammered out in the actual full peace deal, if there is ever a full peace deal. That's one of the main ones the Iranians needed, really, not to be economically strangled back into the Stone Age. Okay. Iran has been hard hit by sanctions, and a US campaign, Operation Economic Fury, has sought to cut Tehran off from the global financial system. Even when I was first working in banking, in asset management, back in the very, very early 2000s, even back then, there were all sorts of sanctions against Iran. Okay, number eight, the big point, the big one, as far as the US are concerned anyway, no nuclear weapons. Iran has agreed to not procure or buy a nuclear weapon, and both sides have agreed to deal with the enriched uranium Tehran already has. The method to manage the material is unclear. The document notes that the mechanism, quote, will be mutually agreed upon in subsequent talks, but that at a minimum, this is sort of perhaps the key point of the key point, at a minimum, it will be downblended, quote, downblended in place, i.e. still in Iran, i.e. Americans don't get their hands on the nuclear dust, in place under the supervision of the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA. Okay, well, they've got highly enriched uranium, weapons-grade uranium, some, and it will be down-blended. Just mix it in with other stuff so it's not weapons-grade anymore, I suppose. And Iran will let the IAEA supervise that, or even perhaps do that. I don't know. Okay. I'd be surprised if the Iranians let the IAEA into their country, like, ever. Maybe they will. Maybe they will. Maybe Iran has finally sort of blinked here. I don't know. I feel like, call me cynical, maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'll be proven wrong. And call me cynical, but I feel like all of this is just one more exercise as far as the Iranians are concerned of playing for time. Just saying, we'll play along. When the moment comes, when the crunch time comes, they'll be like, no. And the moment comes, okay, we're going to let the IAEA in then, yeah? They're like, no. And there's some other reason why we can't or won't. Is that crazily cynical? I don't know. Okay. A senior US official described this as a minimum standard, the downblending of their nuclear dust, 90% weapons-grade uranium. That's a minimum standard and a major win for the US. Not that major. Okay, you can call it a win if you insist. It's not that major, is it? Okay. Trump has said that preventing Iran from having a nuclear weapon was 99% of what he wanted by launching Operation Apex Fury earlier this year. Sorry, Operation Epic Fury earlier this year. Right, yeah. Why did you come out on day one and say it was about regime change then? Because the US has described the deal as performance-based, the sanctions relief specified in point 7 is tied to Iran complying with point 8. All right, if the main thing was really that Iran doesn't have a nuclear weapon, and all this sticks and holds, they're two big ifs, but okay, if that is true, then, well, he did get it then, didn't he? If the Iranians let the IAEA in to confirm that they haven't got any weapons-grade uranium now because it's been downblended, well, okay, then Iran don't have and won't get a nuclear weapon, will they? So in that sense, if all of that is true and given, then true. Okay, that's sort of the main one, point 8. The others are like 9 and 10 are about a status quo, that they'll go basically go back to like an antebellum type situation. Before, everything that was going on before the war started, we'll go back to that. Mainly the US pulling back all like its aircraft carriers and massive deployments of men in the Persian region, in the Persian Gulf. Go back to what it was before the war started. Point 11, the big one for Iran, the frozen funds. America's frozen billions and billions of dollars of Iranian funds, haven't they? And Iran want those unfrozen. And America have basically said, again, in like a performance-based basis, if and when Iran is seen to have be complying, then we'll start unfreezing the funds. Okay. And the last two are just sort of crossing the T's and dotting the I's type stuff about exactly how it will all physically, logistically work. Okay. Apparently the Iranians have... have we got the poll up, Harry? Apparently the Iranians have agreed to this. And Trump, as you saw, signed it. Have we got the picture of it? Was that at the top? Yeah, look, apparently Trump signed it at Versailles. And there might be even another sort of formal signing of it in Switzerland later, although there might not be. That's what the reports are saying. There may or may not be that. But all right. That's what's going on in the Persian War at the moment. What else have we got? The Express. So it's a good paper. The Daily Express. You can read your Daily Express now. 10 years to save Britain and our Brexit, says Nige. Nigel just saying that, you know, you've got to vote him in. You've got to vote for reform. You've got to vote for his vanity project and containment 2.0, the two Tories. You've got to vote for that. So otherwise, Brexit will never get done. It never really got properly done. That's true. And so now you've got to vote for him. Nah. Pass. Okay, the Mail, the Daily Mail. There we go, the Mail group. Again, England scoring some goals. It's actually quite good to say that, actually. Scoring four is not bad at all. Croatia aren't one of the best teams going, but they're all right. So, okay. Miliband set to trigger cabinet coup. Right, so that is that both Wes Streeting and Ed Miliband have finally got a little bit punchy. Harry, can you go back to the main camera, please? Thank you. Miliband and Streeting have both said that whatever happens tonight or in the wee hours with regard to Makerfield and Andy Bumham, no Stern and Burnham, whether he wins or loses, Streeting's going to launch a leadership bid on Monday and Miliband's going to quit the cabinet. So Starmer's position is really tenuous one way or another, isn't it? I mean, again, he almost certainly won't be gone, literally gone from office on Monday or anything. Well, I wouldn't have thought so. It's really, really in the mail now, isn't it? The walls are closing in, the walls are closing in, the walls are closing in. Are the walls closing in on Starmer? The walls are closing in on Starmer. Okay, yeah, Ed Miliband. He's set to get a plum job in any sort of Burnham government. Maybe even Chancellor of the Exchequer, which is better than Energy Secretary, isn't it? Slightly more prestigious. So he's prepared to stab his leader in the back. He's prepared to throw his own party and country into chaos so he can have a slightly better job. What a scumbag. Okay, the Mirror. The Mirror. Pure globalist, some of the worst containment globalist slop in the Mirror. Kate Hospital records for sale. They go for something completely different. Apparently, someone where the Princess of Wales had cancer, didn't she? The radiant Catherine Middleton did have cancer like a couple of years ago. She got better. She did get better. And yeah, the story is that clinic worker sacked after bid to flog princess's private medical files. A member of hospital staff tried to sell the Princess of Wales's medical records. The worker is believed to have... You get it. No shame. That happens. That's actually that happens a fair few times, particularly with the royals. Anyone that's super famous and an A-lister, that can and does happen, but particularly for the royals, for some reason. I've known it to happen half a dozen times maybe in my lifetime, is that one of the royals, like often the Queen Mother it used to be, or the Duke of Edinburgh, they're in hospital for some reason, because they're old, and they don't die, but then their record, and it's all, the palace hushes it up and doesn't release a statement beyond simply that they're okay and they're going to be out of hospital at a certain point. And then some scumbag at the hospital leaks it to the Sun or something, or the Mirror. Okay, the Sun, talking of the Sun. The Sun, they go, just they're just football. Texas Canesaw Massacre, that's actually not bad. As a pun, that's actually not too bad, is it? You get it? Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And that guy there is called Harry Kane. His surname is Kane. Texas Canesaw Massacre. Oh, sorry, it's even better than that. Texas Kane Score Massacre, sorry. They got two puns, you got two for one, you got a twofer there. Texas Kane Score Massacre. That's not bad. That's actually not bad. I think. Give them credit. I mean, it's still treating you like a little child, isn't it? But nonetheless. Harry, Jude and Rash sink old foe. Old foe. Croatia once knocked us out of the World Cup, like, what, 20 years ago or something. Not really exactly an old foe, but all right. The Star, we're getting down to it now. Pure slop now, the Star. The Star, what does Star go with? Joy of Texas. Oh, it's not as good, is it? The wordplay is not as clever, is it? Joy of Texas. All right. I told you the front pages would be dominated by football, particularly a day after an England game, one way or another. All right, won't go on and on about it. I know you guys don't like football. Oh, and the Swindon Advertiser. Oh, no, wait, that's complete absurd slop. Forget it. No one cares. No one reads it or buys it or cares what they say about anything ever, do they? So, nor shall we. All right. There's something wrong with the screen here, Harry, my main screen. At least one. Oh, there you go. Thank you. I just need to know what time it is. Okay, it's 5:30. Shall we have a look at one or two other stories? I told you on days where it's dominated by football, we'll actually get time to talk about some other stories. There was one I thought was interesting. Here we go. Look, here we go. Simpler, older version of Stonehenge found 3 miles from famous site. That's right up my alley. That's the sort of story I'm interested in. Because where I'm sitting here in Swindon is in Wiltshire, very near Amesbury and Salisbury Plain and Stonehenge. Very near. So let's read a tiny bit of this story. Archaeologists believe they have discovered an earlier, even earlier, much simpler version of Stonehenge, about 3 miles away from the prehistoric monument, which isn't far at all. I mean, Salisbury Plain is massive. 3 miles is basically next to it, really, isn't it? All that remains of the older structure is 2 holes in the ground. You might think, what, really? That's insanely unimpressive. So actually, no, when you're looking at prehistory, that's actually a fair amount to go on. But the team says they held wooden posts that lined up with the sun on the summer and winter solstices, the longest and shortest days of the year, in the same way as Stonehenge. They've got a quick little picture here. Look, look, there you go. That's Stonehenge. There's like the solstice, winter and summer solstice. And if you stand right in the middle, well, this is like the same thing. So they only found 2 little holes, but actually they line up. Actually, you can deduce that it would have been something like a calendar, a very, very, very primitive early calendar. The site has been dated to about 5,000 years old, which predates Stonehenge by 500 years. Of course, Stonehenge is, there's many layers of building and rebuilding and reconstruction that went on at Stonehenge over a long period, but the earliest archaeology at Stonehenge is 500 years older than that. Artifacts were also found at the site, including pottery, flint tools and animal bone, suggesting prehistoric people held gatherings there. Phil Harding, Professor Phil Harding from Wessex Archaeology, who led the excavation, said it was one of the best finds of his long career. 2 post pits tell me more about the people 5,000 years ago, he said. This tells me about the whole community. This tells me about how they were thinking, how they were behaving, how they were revering the Evans. That's exactly how Professor Harding speaks, by the way. Okay. The huge stones at Stonehenge. I'm a big fan. I'm not taking the piss. Phil Harding, he's brilliant. He was on Time Team, wasn't he? Anyone who's watched Time Team? He was like the best thing about it, basically. And he's from the West Country. Oi. A great stone napper. He's a master at working stone, napping. Wish I could do that. That was a skill I wish I had. The huge stones at Stonehenge are precisely placed to line up with the sun. If you stand in the middle of the circle at sunrise on the summer solstice, you'll see the sun come up over the stone called the Heel Stone to the northeast of the circle. On midwinter, if standing in the centre of the circle, you'll see the sunset over the Altar Stone to the southwest of the site. There you go. We got one more quote from Phil Harding. I got my pencil and ruler, and I joined them up. And I was aware that they were kind of pointing in the general direction of the sunrise on midsummer, he said. I'll stop doing that. I'll stop doing the Phil Harding impression. Anyway, I thought, okay, I'll move on from that. But I thought that was fascinating. There's even older things. The landscape of Wiltshire, of the southwest of England, Salisbury Plain, it's a truly, truly ancient landscape. I mean, that predates the pyramids, the Great Pyramids of Giza. Not as old as things like Göbekli Tepe or Karen Tepe. But nonetheless, truly, truly ancient. What civilizations? What was their culture? What was their religion? What has been lost? Okay, that's V News. It's polling day. It's the big day. It's the big day. We'll see what happens. I can't wait till tonight to see what happens. All right. Again, just to manage expectations, a solid third for Restore is still a good result. I'm hoping for more, of course. But if we can trounce the Tories and the Lib Dems and the Greens and all the other RANs, so there's like 14, I think something like 14, is it 14 people entering it? Yeah, 14 candidates. You know, a lot of them are sort of nonsense ones, like Count Binface. Count Binface himself is running for the Count Binface Party. Like the Libertarian Party, the Climate Party, an independent or two. Rejoin EU Party, is that still? The Rejoin EU Party, ooh, gross. Raving Monster Loonies are there. Raving Monster Loonies are there. Lord Hope, Howling Lord Hope, okay. If Restore come a respectable, solid third, that's quite a good result, I would say. Let's hope for more. All right. Channel 4, what did we have? Oh, yeah, just a quick thing talking about the Iran deal, Mr. Trump's Iran memorandum of understanding. Of course, people from the Obama administration era coming out and saying it's terrible. But this guy, who is one of Obama's globalist shills, says Trump has lost the war he started. I'll let you guys make up your own decision on that. We spoke to Alan Eyre, who was a core member of the team that negotiated the 2015 nuclear deal between the US and Iran. I mean, you did just give them loads of money and then they didn't do anything you asked them to do. So even if Trump hasn't like achieved all his war aims 100%, he's still done a lot better than you guys did. Surely that's the case. You guys just gave terrorists tons and tons of money and they didn't do anything you asked them to. That pathetic. Pathetic. People in the chat, oh, why are you calling Iran terrorists? You've swallowed all the propaganda, bro. Get real. No, that regime is a bad terroristic regime. Don't try and tell me otherwise. Okay, couple of stories, a little bit sloppy. Couple of more stories, but I thought that were worth mentioning today. Sort of, and also stories. In the Mail, look, get a load of this. Judge granted Jamaican paedophile the right to enter Britain as barring him would, quote, breach his human rights. All right. We need to overhaul all of that. Any human rights legislation that allows that to happen. The judges, Madeline Reeds and Nathan Moxon. What do you think you're doing? You're letting a convicted Jamaican paedophile into the country because it's about his human rights. You're insane. You're mad. That's treasonous. Madeline Reeds and Nathan Moxon. You should never, ever be allowed to judge anything ever again. You've got no judgment. That's mad. Why do you want our women and children to be in danger, Judge Reeds and Moxon? Why are you siding with a convicted paedophile? A foreign convicted paedophile? Why are you doing that? Disgusting filth. Judge Reeds and Moxon. Gross. You'd be disbarred in Bowes Britain immediately. Strips your pension if possible. Revolting. Unbelievable, isn't it? Unbelievable. Now, here's a slightly interesting story. Andy Burnham bombshell as he's reported to police on eve of key Makerfield by-election. What? He's been arrested? He's done something criminal? No. No. Well, it is. Well, I'll quickly read a bit of it. The Labour leadership challenger has described the allegations over COVID lockdown breaches as desperate. Yeah. Well, it was reform people, apparently, reform people. Bitchy, catty, very often. Super pro reform tards, complete partisans. Very, very catty and bitchy. Very, very 13-year-old girl type, vindictive, small-minded types. Apparently, they reported Andy Burnham to the police, like yesterday, at the Manchester police, because of, in 2021, he may have flouted lockdown restrictions by having some sort of gathering, allegedly having some sort of gathering in 2021. But the police, apparently the police immediately said, oh, well, even if he did, it's outside the statute of limitations anyway. So that's it. There's nothing to investigate. End of story. And you would have thought the reform people that did this would have known that as well. So it's purely a political stunt to generate a headline like that. Andy Burnham has been reported to the police. Completely contrived nonsense. What it is. And King Bumham himself and his guyliner and his double chins. No Stern and Burnham calls it desperate. Yeah, it is, though, to be fair. A bit desperate. A bit pathetic, actually. All right. Shall we have a look at On This Day in History stuff? Oh, one last thing in the Sun. Texas Hold'em. After England won their game against Croatia, a lot of the players went up into the stands where their wives and girlfriends were, where the wags were, wives and girlfriends. And some of them kissed their wives and girlfriends. That's the top of the Sun. That's the most important thing as far as the website of the Sun is concerned. Texas Hold'em. All right. Okay, the Sun, if you say so. All right, let's have a look at On This Day in History. What have we got? Down through the centuries, on this day, the 18th of June. What happened of note? All right. On this day in 618 AD, coronation of Chinese governor Li Yuan as Emperor Gaozu of Tang and the new emperor as the new emperor of China, initiating 3 centuries of Tang dynasty rule over China. As I've said a number of times, unfortunately, it's not really my wheelhouse. I know a bit about it, but not a fantastic amount of detail. So I'll move on what I do know about. On this day in 1812... The War of 1812 begins when the US declares war against Britain. Harry, if you go to what this camera? Yeah. On my channel, History Bro. Oh, actually, it's also on Epoch. It's got a long-form bit of content in conversation with Benjamin Boyce, the great Boycey, all about the War of 1812. In fact, I think it was our first conversation we had together. All about the War of 1812. If you want a long-form bit of content of me telling the story of the War of 1812, it's on lotusetus.com. It might even be a freemium one where it's not behind the paywall. You don't have to spend as little as £5 a month for Bronze Tier membership. I'm not sure. Anyway, me and Benjamin Boyce, mainly me, talking about the War of 1812. That was where, if you don't know, basically the United States tried to invade Canada 3 times. They tried to invade Canada 3 times and failed. The United States Army in 1812 wasn't sort of a giant, all-powerful, all-dominating army like they've got these days. It was ragtag, thrown together, not great, not particularly professional. And of course, Canada belonged to Great Britain. I mean, it's still part of the Commonwealth to this day. The Queen is still on their money to this day, right? So they were repulsed from their attempts to invade Canada. And the war went on for a few years. 2 years later, in 1814, Britain decides to get their own back by attacking Washington, D.C. and fairly famously burning the White House down. Okay, but historians always argue who won and who lost the War of 1812. Basically, the real answer is there weren't any great winners. The United States didn't get its war aims of trying to annex Canada, and Britain didn't get its war aims of trying to sort of reverse all the losses of the Revolutionary War or anything like that. Nobody really won. It was a little bit of humiliation all round in the end. Apart from the Canadians. The Canadians love the War of 1812. They love it. Because they're like, you know, do you remember that time, Americans? Remember that time, dear the US? Remember that time you tried to invade us? And we handed your axes to you. Do you remember that? So Canadians love it. But as far as the US and Britain are concerned, it's a little bit like, we won't talk about that very often, shall we? Probably best if we don't. We're supposed to be brothers and friends and cousins, aren't we? So we won't talk about that very often. Okay, on this day in 1815 is Waterloo. The day at Waterloo. As I said at the top of the show, it's Waterloo Day. Happy Waterloo Day. Napoleon Bonaparte and France are defeated by the British forces under Arthur Wellesley, the Duke of Wellington, and Prussian troops under Field Marshal von Blücher. I quite often pronounce that wrong. One of those ones, however you pronounce it, someone will say, oh no, you don't pronounce it like that. Anyway, Blücher, whatever. There's a great film, 1970 film, just called Waterloo, with Rod Steiger as Napoleon. And Christopher Plummer as Wellington. One of the very earliest epochs, like one of the first five epochs. I'm in conversation with the critical drinker, all about that. So that's there. O'Day's epochs. And also, I've got a series about Napoleon later, like a couple of years later, where I'll talk about it again. And then also a couple of years after that, I've got long form content all about Wellington, where I talk about it again in some detail. So three times you can have me talking about Waterloo. I won't go into it here, but yeah, very, very interesting. Very, very interesting and pivotal battle. Okay, on this day in 1928, American aviator Amelia Earhart becomes the first woman to fly across the Atlantic Ocean, landing in Berryport, Wales. Good for her. Well done. That sounds really sarcastic. I didn't mean that. Yeah, well done. Quite brave. Those early planes, 1928 era aeroplane, not that reliable, basically. There's a half-decent chance you'll just come down in the ocean and never, ever be found. They're quite brave. Okay, and on this day in 1940, Winston Churchill gives his "This Was Their Finest Hour" speech to the House of Commons, urging perseverance in the war after the Dunkirk evacuation and the fall of France. Yeah, classic bit of history, isn't it? The Battle of France is over. The Battle of Britain is to begin. Yeah, I mean, imagine that these days. It's a classic thing. You should listen to it. It's just on YouTube or everywhere. It's just, you know, we're staring down the barrel of being invaded by Mr. Hitler and the Nazi Panzer divisions. And, prepare yourself. Imagine that if our Prime Minister came on. Imagine Keir Starmer coming on the TV going, we're probably going to get invaded by Russia, so prepare yourself. And, you know, even if we're wiped out for 1,000 years, we'll still come back. There'll still be Englishmen and England will still exist, even if the Russians occupy us for 1,000 years. You're like, oh, okay. Oh, all right. Even if they completely defeat us, we'll get the Australians and the Americans to ultimately save us. Oh. Huh. Okay. All right then. And this will be our finest hour, is it? Okay. There's a number of Churchill speeches, which in hindsight are sort of, you know, very sort of galvanizing, and you can see how they were a great morale boost. But try and imagine at the time, you know, the sort of we'll fight them on the beaches thing. Try and imagine if it was actually your country's being invaded, or they're trying to get air superiority over your country so that they can invade you. And if they do invade you, if you lose that air battle, you're done. Their army's far more superior to yours. You will be successfully invaded if you don't win this air battle, which is 50-50, absolutely hanging in the balance. And your leader comes on the TV or the radio, and they say, your leader says to you, you're not going to surrender. We're not surrendering. You're not surrendering. I'm asking you to basically, if when they invade, fight them on the beaches. And then if that doesn't work, because we can't repel them on the beaches, we'll fight them running battles through every town and city. And then in the hills. And then after that, we'll fight them in the hills. What, really? Are we? Is that, we're doing that? Oh, okay. And even then, when we lose, we'll still, if you can, escape to Canada or the United States or something. And we'll continue fighting on from there, if anything. So, oh, okay. 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 I mean, when you're in a situation of total war, it is what's required, isn't it? That sort of steel, that sort of spirit. But, okay. All right. I know a lot of people in this sphere despise Churchill and everything he ever said, never did. And I've said a number of times, haven't I? I'm not a fan of Churchill, the politician, particularly. If you look at the focus and various elements that may have influenced him and his policy. Okay, let's have a look at our Rumble Rants and Super Chats. Okay. What have we got here? I wonder if Global Church History will be in at number one. He is. Reigning, defending, and still. Global Church History. What have we got here? He says, on this day in 1264 AD, the first Parliament of the Lordship of Ireland met at Castle Dermont in County Kildare. Right, so what would that be? That would be 1264. That's got to be Henry III, isn't it? That would be Henry III. So still really sort of Norman kings, or Angevin, and you know, he's King John's son, isn't he? A child came to the throne, lived to be quite long, ruled for a lot of 60, knocking 70 years or whatever. Very pivotal time. I think I've got long form content all about Henry III. Oh yeah, it's all there. All right, and your other factoid this morning is that in 1542, the Parliament of the Lordship of Ireland voted to make Henry VIII king. Yeah, Henry VIII was lucky in his time in all sorts of ways. I'm currently doing Henry VIII, aren't I? I'm up to sort of part four of Henry VIII. There'll probably be at least six episodes on that. Henry VIII was lucky in his time. A generation or two before, very, very tumultuous. A generation or two after, again, really quite tumultuous. In his time, he got to rule much as he liked. The Scottish were quelled. And the Irish were quelled, largely. Okay, all right, let's move on. Pigdog5150 says, re the inquiry. When Rupert is Prime Minister, I truly hope he brings judgment on all those who covered it up and facilitated local business owners to the police, lawyers, judges, MPs, royals. Yes, absolutely. Couldn't agree more. He's done some tweets that are saying things like people will be held to account for their crimes. That would be great. I would love it. A true reckoning for all those involved who facilitated or allowed or even turned a blind eye when they knew people, men and women, were being raped. When children were being gang raped. Yeah. Yeah. Retribution for that. Justice. Actual justice for that. Any councillor, any politician, any policeman, any of these care home workers, the care homes that seemed to effectively work as brothels for Muslim Pakistani men to turn up, have a pick of their child, the care home workers working as effectively as madams or pimps. Yeah, justice against those people. I couldn't agree with you more, Pig Dog. It's one of the reasons why I'm going to vote Restore to the hilt. Okay, Jeffrey Farnell says, I have a book recommendation. The Cloister and the Hearth by Charles Reed. Oh, I haven't heard of that one. It's a theoretical life of the parents of Erasmus set across medieval Europe. The parents of Erasmus. That sounds interesting. Conan Doyle said it was his favourite book, Arthur Conan Doyle. So what is it, a 19th century or very early 20th century book, is it? The Cloister and the Hearth. Okay, never heard of it. That sounds good, though. I'll check it out. Erasmus, of course, if anyone doesn't know, one of the most famous thinkers and authors of what, the early 16th century. A fictional story about his parents. Wow. What an interesting concept. Thanks for that book recommendation. Okay. Fortean Barber says, morning, all right. I'm all right. How are you, sir? Remember on Star Trek when Picard was replaced for two episodes by Jellicoe? That's just the Star Trek Next Generation. Vaguely remember. I didn't watch every single episode of Next Generation. Okay. There's a fire in the building. We do fire drills all the time. It's never usually at this time of day, and it lasts about 2, 3, maybe 4 seconds. That's not what this is it? Yeah, all the producers are just saying, wrap it up. Okay, there may or may not be a real fire in this building. Probably isn't a real one, but I guess we're going to wrap it up there. Make the best of the day ahead, if you can. And I'll see you on Monday, because Dan's doing the show on Friday, tomorrow. All right, then, we'll end it there. Cheers, guys.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.